Hello, La. How are things in the basement?
Oh, everything is nice in the basement. I got the window nailed shut. I'm going to be nice and cozy today. And I
That's
don't know.
gonna keep the rats out of the cellar.
That's right. And I'm excited because today's kind of like a second chance. I was an idiot last time that we did this interview, and I'm glad we're going to get to do it again and prove ourselves as the journalists that we are. This
Yeah.
journalist of Schenectady, New York, the
I think people
best.
say that about us, amongst other things. Well, anyways, welcome everyone to episode 4 of season 3 of the Half Alive podcast.
We're the Law and Law Brothers. My name is Law.
And my name is Law.
We are 60-year-old
With
twins.
more than a few career, financial, mental health, and size challenges,
Our podcast is for people like us.
people in the arts who tried and failed to make a living doing what we love.
I was an actor in LA, and my brother was a writer in New York City.
And now we live in a condemned and forgotten house in Schenectady, New York.
Freezing to death most of the time and spiraling into financial ruin.
But we're stubbornly making our final act all about the joy of artistic creation.
And speaking of joy, we're re-interviewing playwright Dan Guyton because the sound in the last interview was so bad that I don't know.
We never said we knew what we were doing, Law.
No, we don't. But we're absolutely thrilled to have Dan Guyton back with us today, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia. He drove here from Schenectady. I think he took a bus, a plane,
What
a
are you
donkey, and he made it.
what are you talking about? Yes,
I'm just playing, Law. I'm just
he took a train
playing.
to Schenectady to be on Zoom. Okay, to review his bio, Dan Guyton is a published and internationally produced playwright, screenwriter, actor, director, teacher, and funny man.
And his stage plays have been produced over 600 times around the world. His screenplays have won numerous
He
awards.
also acts and directs.
And he's primarily a sadist, I mean, a satirist, and with a focus on the morally ambiguous and weird. His work is typically funny with a hint of gravitas. I
It's called
practice that, Law.
satirist law.
Satirist, satirist,
All right, a real
satirist. Well, I
professional would
practice
sound the words out
gravitas.
before the show. Anyway, he does not enjoy writing about himself in the third person, but he has to pay the bills. He is a modest man, mostly.
Welcome, Dan Guyton. Dan, what does gravitas mean? Now, tell us about your most recent projects.
Well, it's two
It's
questions
gravitas.
there. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I did not fly here. I zoomed in because of technology allows me to do that. And I'll be honest, I'm a little bit afraid of the airlines at this particular moment in time. There's been a couple of crashes and stuff. So I'm gonna stick with Zoom as long as I'm able to. But thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it. Gravitas means a seriousness, a weight. Sort of like this conversation has a lot of gravitas, or at least I'm going to pretend it does. So, but thank you for having me. Most recent projects, I run a group called Atlanta Dramatists, and in the past year, we got our 501c3 nonprofit status, and so we are designed to help other people tell stories. We help with workshops and playwriting, readings, and we're working on our full production that's coming up soon, and we're really looking forward to that. And that's a lot of fun.
What's the
How
full
many
production,
productions do
can you
you
say?
say that more? I heard both of you at that time.
Oh, what's the full production, can you say?
It's called the Solidarity Festival, and it is a festival of short plays all related to peaceful, nonviolent protest. And so we are actively seeking scripts right now. It's going to be a collection of maybe 4 to 6 short plays that all deal with historical events that have to do with peaceful, nonviolent protest. Things like civil rights movement and stuff like that.
Since you brought that up, do you want to leave any like an email or something for them to for someone to do a submission if they want to?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to. I'm happy to send it to you for sure.
Oh,
We will
well, and
post
if
it
you want
on
to
the show
tell, yeah, well.
description. Yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to. That'd be great. Yeah, our submissions are accepted until December 31st.
Oh, perfect. All right. So Dan, I have to ask you, and this is insensitive perhaps, but how does one stay alive in the arts financially, as we
Oh
have
boy.
not?
Yeah, a lot of times prostitution is a big help.
Isn't it?
Yeah, working the streets.
Yeah, we
No.
tried.
Yeah, did
We
you kind
tried,
of?
but the streets wouldn't have us.
No,
No.
oh, no.
They
They
kept
kept
handing
handing
us money as if we were homeless.
Well,
They paid
that's
us
one
to
way to do
stay
it.
home.
You have to pay you to stay home. That's one way to do it. Yeah. Sometimes if the streets don't work, you might choose like the dirt roads, off the side.
I
Sometimes
didn't
those
think of
are
that.
more helpful. Yeah. Depends on who's working in those, who's living in those streets, too. Avenues might be a bit much.
Like sandy underwear, like when you go to the beach for a
Yeah,
long time.
that can be a challenge. Yeah, you want to definitely find like a tuft of grass somewhere off the side there. Yeah.
Well, so you've done over 600 productions, right, of your own plays, and
Yeah.
is that what it, how, so how are you with rejection now? Like
Well,
we
La,
were,
wait, hold on a second. He's answering my
what?
question about money, and you change the subject.
I was interrupting
Pay
you, though.
attention.
All right, so I'll go back to this. So for really for money, I'm also a teacher, and so that's my day job is I make my living teaching and molding the minds of youth. But I use that money to support myself financially with my theater and creating artwork. Like I said, we are a 501c3 with our theater group that we run, and so we get donations, we write grants. Right now, there's a lot of issues with grants because of some of the stuff happening with federal government and the NEA and all that stuff. But a lot of people that are doing well off are willing to donate, and that's been a big help for us is to kind of stay floated with that.
What do you teach to
I
stay
teach
alive?
theater and English. So I'm also,
Oh.
I teach writing, creative writing. I teach literature and composition writing as well.
Oh, that's
Is
excellent.
that?
So you're really not like out of the game while you're at work. You're not like working at an insurance agency or anything.
No, yeah, there's actually stuff that kind of informs what I do, because when I'm teaching college students or whether I'm teaching other writers how to develop their scripts, it's still in the same realm.
How do you feel when you come across a student that's like, you see real talent there?
Yeah, I wonder,
Like,
is there a way that I could take that work and put my name on it and put it out there?
ah.
I'm kidding. Now, of course, now if I see that, I really want to try to help them and hone them and get them, the success that they deserve. It's a big reward to me if I see somebody do really well that I in any way had some assistance with helping them. I really
Wow.
appreciate that.
That's really big of you because I have nothing but jealousy and hatred for people who have succeeded that I knew from the past. And
Yeah,
I
really.
wish I could feel good for them, but I mean, I was not their teacher, but I don't know what it is. It's just absolutely no celebration. It's just another nail in the coffin of my career.
Really? Oh,
And we've
that's
looked at
interesting.
that closely. We used to play a game was, is it our fault, their fault, what have you, to try to figure it all out because we don't want to live with that bitterness anymore either, but it is
Yeah.
what it is. We just don't have your, I don't know, what do you
Talent.
call what you have that you
Talent
don't have
job.
that bitterness?
Well, I heard
Yeah.
this overheard this conversation a few days ago, and it was somebody said, somebody asked their friend, they said, "Do you believe in God?" And he said, "Well, someone's out to get me."
Ah!
I think there's there may be something to that, I don't know.
So, La, what was your question you were going to ask when you interrupted me?
Well, it was about rejection, but now I'm thinking more like, because I remember we talked last time. I think I asked you about what was it like the first time you saw your work as a writer on stage and comparing it to you being just an actor.
Yeah.
And I think you said something about it was good to be part of the whole creation of the project as opposed to just being an actor.
Yeah.
Does that
Yeah.
ring a bell?
Yeah, sort of. I think there's two questions there. What is it like to sit on the outside watching something that I wrote come to life? And I think there is something really magical about that. It's because when you're sitting there on a computer and you're typing away, or some writers will handwrite their scripts, right? Or even an old school typewriter, whatever you've got. But there's something about that you're sort of in a closed room, you're writing usually by yourself, and to have other people, preferably with talent, reading those words aloud and hearing an audience laugh at it, and just that excitement of feeling like You're responsible for other people's enjoyment, and that's really a lovely, delightful experience. And I think the first time that ever happened, I was in college. I was at SUNY Albany, and I wrote a script for a with just a couple friends. I mean, I wrote it actually with one friend. We co-wrote that one together, so that was kind of fun. It was about two guys sitting in a bar trying to pick up women, and it was my friend and I. We sat in a bar, and instead of picking up women, we were writing a script. And it actually ended up being a lot of fun. And we had it performed in front of the school, and people loved it. And the other students really got a kick out of it. And it made me feel like, hey, there may be something here. Maybe I could actually do something with this. And so that became kind of exciting.
Are most of your plays full lengths, one acts, shorts?
A mix.
Mix.
I'd say the majority are probably shorts because they're quick and easy to write. I can write a short probably in a couple of hours and knock it out. But
Wow.
I've written a few full lengths. But the majority are short pieces.
So I was going to ask you about the issue with people revising your words, say, during rehearsals. How does that go over with you? Because, writers tend to get enamored of their own work, and they don't want to change things, and they don't want other people to change things. But it happens, right, on stage.
I would say it depends. I've had a couple of experiences where an actor changed something and actually improved upon the script, and I kind of I appreciate that. If they could do take that and make it better, I'm okay with that. But I've had experiences where somebody will change something and it actually makes it worse, and that's not fun. There's sometimes I do a lot of plays on words, or puns, or kind of like words that could mean multiple things. And so if the actor changes the word entirely, then it loses the whole. There was like kind of a small little moment, but there was this play where there's a doctor and he's got a needle and he's trying to there's a mental health patient, and he has the needle, and he's coming at him, and he says, "Look, just sit still. Just be a little prick." And the guy said, "You're just a little jerk." And I'm like, "Well, the word prick has two meanings. So by changing it, you've actually lost one of the meanings. It's now just an insult. There's no other way to interpret it." And so that was a concern of mine. I didn't like that. But I've had others where they'll add in like an improv moment or something, or somebody, just a it's off the cuff, and it sometimes works really, really well. And so it really depends on the actor. I think if you work with somebody with a lot of talent, it can enhance the script in some ways. And if you work with somebody that is maybe, I don't want to say not no talent, but just somebody that doesn't have the right instincts, then it could be
Right.
go the opposite direction.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, but you answered it about, somebody getting up on stage and mugging. They feel like they've got the crowd with them, but not for the right reasons.
I think a lot of times that if you're doing that and it's not for the right reasons, and if you're mugging and your instincts are off, you may get the cheap laughs, but then it
Right.
doesn't help the rest of the cast, and you're not really working as a team. I think a really good actor that is listening to their castmates and really responding and working well with the castmates can find the that rhythm and find the nuance of what they're saying.
Right.
Even if it's silly, and even if they're trying to mug, as long as they're all in sync together, then it could actually be quite funny. But if they're working at odds with the rest of the cast, or working at odds with the script, then it really becomes a problem.
What is your writing schedule for? You're talking to two of the most undisciplined people on earth here in every aspect of their lives,
Sure.
but you are clearly disciplined. What do you do?
So that's a great question. I would say right now, as a college professor, there's obviously a lot of job requirements. I mean, there's a lot of grading, there's a lot of class preparation, there's a lot of stuff at my job, my work, that sort of precludes writing on a daily basis. So I'm not actually able to write daily like I used to. And so what I do is I typically during the week, when I have job requirements such as grading or whatever, that's got to take precedence. But as soon as I have like a weekend, or if there's a night off, or if I get caught up early, then I have my time to write. And so what I try to do is make up for lost time. And so I may spend like an entire Sunday just writing, or I may take or if I have like, let's say, a Thursday night and I'm just free, I'll magically free, I'll spend that time writing. And so it's not as disciplined as I used to be. I used to be able to do like write a little bit every day. It's just not feasible with my current job at the moment. But I try to make up for it whenever I can. So, because I do miss writing when I'm not able to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Lai, you look
I have
like
a
you're going to say
question.
something.
I was and I am. So
Wait, you could see each other? I thought one was in the attic, one's in the basement. How's that working?
it's the magic of Zoom.
Wow, okay,
We
that's
might as well
cool.
be in Atlanta, let me tell you,
Oh
as far as
yeah,
I
it
ever
feels
get
like you're
down
in here.
there.
It does. Yeah.
So Law and I, believe it or not, we believe we're immensely talented.
Yeah, I see that. I
I'm
see that you believe that.
kidding. Well, we had a certain amount of to do whatever we did, but we've decided through this podcast that we're socially inept, and that really hurt us. So how do you go about getting your productions made? Is it through just like emails and letters, or do you actually go out and terror among terror, go to parties and introduce yourself? And how do you deal with the schmoozing part of it? Because that's the part
Right.
that we're terrible at. And honestly, somebody sees us coming and then I want to, get to know them better. So how do you
Sure.
do that? How do you get your work in front of people and
I've
get
done
it
all of the
made?
above. There's a lot of theaters here in Atlanta, and when I first moved here, I reached out to them. I said, "Hey, do you need any volunteers? Is there anything, you know?" And I would volunteer. I would work as an usher. I would, work backstage, get to know the people. And so there is something about schmoozing that gets you in the door. And if you're a volunteer, they love volunteers. Everybody loves a free labor. And so if
Right.
you're willing to volunteer for them, they will actually say hi and get to know your name and find out about you. And obviously, if you don't make a good impression, that could be a problem, you know. But the goal, of course, is to make a good impression. And then eventually, they say, "Hey, well, what do you do?" And you say, "I write scripts." And then they say, "Oh, well, let me read some." And so kind of that could work. But another thing I do as well, because I've had productions around the world, that is obviously I'm not there to volunteer. But I've got a show going up right now in Australia, and the way
Wow.
that was just emailing. I emailed a couple of theaters that might, be interested. Sometimes theaters will put out competitions. They'll say, "Hey, we're looking for scripts on this theme." And if I see that, I'll send them what I have. It helps. I've written so many plays. I have like a lot of plays on different themes. And so if somebody says, "I'm looking for a play with this theme," "Oh, wow, look at that. I have one." And I'll send it out to them. And so if that hits and they like it, then they'll pick it, which is great.
And do you have an agent or have you ever had an agent? I mean, how does it work in the literary world?
It's very hard to get an agent in the literary world. There are a few. There's about, I think, 50 different agents that are, recommended by the Dramatists Guild, which I'm a member of. And but they are really, really picky. And I've written to them. I had one very successful play back when I was real young, when I was in my 20s, and it was produced and it ran for about 4 months, and it was a pretty big success. And so I had a couple of agents show an interest, but then when I sent them the script, they were like, "Not quite what we're looking for right now." And so I did not get the agent at that point. And since then, I've written to agents and tried to get agents. They're mostly the answer I usually get is where you have too many clients at this time. We can't take you. So there's like I said, about 50 different agents, but there's, thousands of playwrights in the world, and they just they're very, very selective. The true answer is it's a catch 22, because you have to have like one really big production to get the agent's attention. So I've had, over actually at this point, I've had over 700 productions. It's gone up since we last met. But they're all tend to be pretty short, and most of them are short plays. And so they might be like a 3 weekend run or something like that. And that doesn't really get an agent's attention. So you need to be like in a place where you're making a couple thousand dollars. Now, altogether, I've made a lot of money, but individually, when an individual show hasn't really done that well since I was in my early 20s. And so if you can do that, like for example, you get a Broadway production or even an off-Broadway production, that the agents start reaching out to you. And that's what, that's that has been elusive to me. So I have not achieved that level of success. So I've achieved quantity, and I think my work has quality, but there's not been a single production that has been a highly attractive to an agent sort of thing, if that makes sense.
And
Yeah.
one doesn't have to live in New York City to get an agent.
No, you don't have to live in New York City, but especially as a writer. Now, as an actor, it's probably a good idea to be near where the theaters are. But as a writer, the work can be, mailed in. Like Stephen King lives in, like, I don't think he even lives in Maine anymore. I think he lives in, I forget where he lives, but it's like he's in a rural area, but he sends his work out, and that's, how it gets done. So, yeah.
How do
But
you feel about AI? Like people are using
it's
AI to help them with their emails now. They
I
can.
know.
I read. I saw an advertisement that they're not even, when you put in a script submission, they're not even reading it anymore. They're plugging it into an AI that can read it to them or act out scenes for them or just create, character development every day. So, how do
Yeah.
you feel about that?
It's scary. As a college professor, I'm mostly affected because I see a lot of students using it to write their papers. And
Is it
so there are
obvious?
ways, there's clear ways you can tell. And it's considered cheating. And so if you catch them, you penalize them. But a lot of times it's hard to know because, like, sometimes students will write most of it and then they'll use AI to clean up the grammar, which is actually not a bad way to use AI. If you're going to use it for anything, cleaning up your typos is not a bad way. Where it becomes difficult is, like, are they using it just to clean up grammar? Or are they using it to write the whole paper? And that becomes a problem. And so there's a lot of different discussions that we've had at my college about how to address this and deal with it. And there's no real true consensus. It's just sort of like, trying to encourage students to use their own minds and their own thought processes. In terms of writing plays and scripts, that is a big concern. I'm also in the Writers Guild of America, which is for cinematography. I've written some film scripts, and so there's a big concern there. And the WGA was successful. They had a big protest about 2 years ago, and they were very successful at getting Hollywood to agree not to accept AI scripts. And so will that last? I don't know. That may change at some point. But that is scary as an artist, because it's like, okay, we might lose our livelihood to a machine. When originally, when AI was being discussed, it was like, oh, well, maybe they could diagnose medical issues. Maybe AI could be used to, like, do, manual labor that nobody wants to do. And now it's like, it's taking away the fun jobs that people enjoy, and we're still stuck with the manual labor jobs, which is really not going to be ideal for our society. So I'm a little bit concerned about it. I know a lot of people love it. I run a writers group, and I have one writer that loves AI, and he actually, I mean, he's a little bit nervous about it too, but he uses it actively for his scripts, and he talks about it. Like, he gives credit to it. He doesn't, like, try to lie about it. But it's a really interesting thing that he is, actively trying to embrace this technology as a script writing tool. And we don't shut him out. We're curious to know how this will affect us in the long run. So we've been reading some of his scripts and workshopping them, and it's a very interesting, challenging thing. And also, I've seen Terminator like a million times, so I'm also worried about destroying us all eventually. So there's that too.
I
I
gotta
heard
ask,
I
how can you can how can sorry, Locke, how can you actually tell the AI parts in his script from the non-AI AI parts, and what sort of tips you off that this has been computer generated?
Well, one thing is really interesting. He wrote one about a person interacting with the computer. So he wrote the human dialogue, and he had the computer write the other stuff.
I
So it
see.
actually worked out well. Like, it fit the what he was writing about. So in that particular context, it was actually quite ingenious. But then he's tried other things where, like, right now, because AI can write music too, which is kind of wild. There's a program called Sonos, and so he wrote a musical, and he's never written music. He has this, the AI create the music for his musical, which was a really interesting thing. And the music actually sounded pretty good. And then he went and found a composer that actually transcribed what the AI did and turned it into. So there's a human behind it now, but he started it and got people's attention with the AI, which I don't know.
It's like he's using it as a tool, though. When you use it as a tool, that's actually. Do you remember the movie Fame way back? Well, you're younger than us, but do you remember there was a kid in music class, and he was one of the first people to use the electronic keyboard, and it was just shocking, the electronic keyboard. It's not music, but it was, and people still use it, right? So maybe there is a way that AI can enhance as long as it's
Yeah.
manipulated by the artist
Right.
and you know, but I know that there's still people that might, couple people still speak to me in Los Angeles, and they said all the acting work for commercials has dried up because all the actors are AI now. It's cheaper for them. The whole production is they don't need cinematographers, they don't need anything. They just need AI, tell them what they want, it does their commercial. So
It's
it's
very,
drying up for everybody there.
it is.
That's not good.
Yeah, I know one big concern is people are worried about extras, because extras, you know, you can make some money as an extra, right? It's not a
Right.
lot of money. You can make some money doing day work as an extra, but they're trying to move towards eliminating extras and just having AI do the background people, which, you know, would save the studio money, but it's not great for the employees, you know. So
Or
it's.
letting the actor do it once and then them agreeing that they can use your image in 100 movies, you know,
Exactly.
and you get paid once.
Yeah, well, it's like McDonald's. You know, you go to McDonald's, and now that everything's like touch screen, and there's no like, you know, and I'll be honest, I went there once, and the touch screen. I was like, I don't want to touch this screen after Lord knows who's been touching it, you know. So, yeah. So I don't know. It's a whole big conflict there. I don't know.
This is why I have tantrums. I mean, I have trouble with impulse control when I lose my temper. And I think I'm very reasonable person, but when you're confronted with a lot of this stuff and it's so unfair that I may have a tantrum on the set that gets me fired,
Yeah.
and
But is that why you have all
it
those
makes
holes in the background there in the wall?
yeah,
Yeah. Okay. That
right,
makes
Law?
sense. Well, to say that my brother-in-law has impulse control problems is a little bit like saying the ocean is wide.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a redundancy, but it does lead me to the question about rejection. You know, everybody's got to deal with it and nobody likes it. But, you know, so you have all these plays and everything. We look at you and we say, you know, he's got this huge body of work, but you've dealt with the rejection, surely.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, I just want to speak to the impulse control. If Christian Bale can do it, you can do it. Don't, you know, just it's
He
fine.
wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong. I heard that.
Yeah,
I
sure, that's true.
like him. He lost his temper. All right.
I
He
know,
wasn't
exactly.
wrong.
Right. So, you know, if he could do it, you're in the bag. You're safe. You're in the clear.
I keep screaming that when I have a tantrum. Christian Bale, get out of the coverage. Why can't I do it? But they don't even know who he is at Walmart.
Well, I think they do. They're just putting you on. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
true. But the question that you asked, would you mind repeating that question, Attic?
Oh, I was just talking about, you know, when we look at your catalog or your body of work, we're very impressed. But there's probably a trail of rejection too that, you
Oh,
know, we don't
rejection.
see.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as an actor, as a writer, you know, there's rejections constantly. It's you know, just part of the game. And I think because of, like you saw that I have a little over 700 productions, but we're talking thousands of rejections. You know, for every one that I could produce, there's probably about 100 that have been turned down by. And so, you know, there's like 7,000 no's. But at this point in my life, I kind of accept like for every no that I get, for every yes that I get, there's going to be 10 no's. And so if I get 9 no's, I'm like, all right, the next one's going to be hit, you know. So that tends to be not always consistent. Sometimes like 2 in a row will be good, and then, you know, the next 18 or not. But you know, it's not really a very specific ratio, but a lot of rejections, you know, usually ends up being one positive for quite a handful of rejections. So it's the majority of theaters and events and competitions are, you know, if I don't get it, I don't get it. But there's a couple that I'm like, I really, really want to get in that, and I have
Yeah.
not gotten in. There's the Eugene O'Neill Festival. I've submitted like, you know, almost every year and not gotten in there. I'd love to get into the Eugene O'Neill. There's a handful of places that I would love to be a part of, and just have not had the opportunity yet. And this could be a little bit heartbreaking because I want it so bad.
Yeah.
But then, you know, but the majority of rejections, I go, oh, well, next time. I've also been on the other side too, you know, running a theater. We get submissions all the time. We have submissions right now, and I've got to say no to a bunch of people
Right.
too. It's usually not personal, and I know that when I'm saying no, it's usually like, well, I like it, but it doesn't quite fit what we need right now. So it's not like we're shutting them down as a person. We're just saying this specific script does not fit what our festival will be. And so having seen it from that end, makes the rejection go down a lot easier too, because it's not really about me as much as what they need at that moment.
Did you hear that, Law? Did you hear that? How a classy person deals with rejection instead of throwing things and screaming at B.
Well,
Arthur on set
I
of
did,
Golden
and
Girls?
I was thinking about how, it just doesn't quite fit what we're looking for right now. And I'm thinking,
Yeah.
well, where would I fit now in the acting world? Who would you cast me as? I mean, but that's not, it's not about me. This is about
Well, there's a
Dan.
lot of horror films out there. I mean, there's a lot of different stuff that you could
Damn,
definitely
don't make me go off. Don't make me
consider.
go off. Because actually, I've practiced years trying to look like, how do you look scared, like suddenly scared? And I think the actor wants to go like this, and it looks fake. But you
Right.
have to start, right? Like this. And then when you're scared, you go, make your face go dead. And then it looks more real, right? Like surprise me.
Right. Although that kind of
Right.
looks like the puppy from Up.
I thought you were going to surprise me. All right,
Yeah.
well, whatever.
No, I think
La, have
it
you
was
ever
good.
thought about auditioning for the puppy from Up? He's aged.
yes, I have. I've been practicing, my barking for years. Don't you hear me down here, howling at the moon after
Well,
midnight?
I heard you howling
All
about
this
something.
rejection, food never rejects you. And I think that's the problem.
No.
You go to what where your comfort is, and I think you have enough success now to not take it so personally, because it's just a matter of numbers. 100 submissions is a production or whatever. And it's a good lesson for everybody. Just hang in there, and it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
And it's also a personality game too. It's as far as learn to be a good giver, as far as go to a volunteer and be helpful and be part of the gang, and then they'll maybe pay you back by reading your script. It's a good lesson.
It is, yeah. And I don't know if you remember from a movie by Wes Craven called People Under the Stairs, which is, I think, what your situation is right now, right?
Exactly.
That could be an
I
idea for
think
like
the
a remake.
stairs still work. They're kind of crumbling.
I wouldn't go
Well,
up them, Law, if I were you.
yeah. So if they ever do a remake, that could be a good way to get in.
How
So,
does it work for my brother Law, though? My brother Law isn't in the theater world. He writes novels and nonfiction. And how do they schmooze?
How
How
do they?
do, like, there's no place to, you can't go volunteer at a, random house.
You could volunteer at a library. You could volunteer at a bookstore, maybe that's nearby, and try to get the book on the shelf at the bookstore or the library. That's one way to maybe get in there. Has it been published, Law?
I haven't actually completely finished it. I was thinking about self-publishing. I was going to have to self-publish it, but I need to find some readers and see
You
if it's
had the book
brilliant
about
debut.
Gloversville that got published, the
That's true. Back in
Gloversville
the well,
Haunted Houses.
I don't know if Dan knows about our that we had brief blips of success in the 90s before we came back with our giant tails between our legs. So my brother was on all kinds of sitcoms, bit parts, and I had two books published, both of which are out of print. But that's when I had an agent. That's when I was young and
Sure.
had I was doing nonfiction back then, but it was always about murder because,
Okay.
never goes
Well,
out of style.
no, murder is always a popular thing. They have that whole Ed Gein story just came out on Netflix.
Yeah.
Very popular right now. So yeah, that could be you can write about something that's the current events right now. Think about some of the crazy murders that have happened now and
Actually,
write about them. Yeah.
I think Ed Gein was a relative of ours, right, Law? A distant
Actually,
relative.
probably.
I see the
So,
resemblance, yeah. Yeah. Because we do
so
look a
have
little bit like
you
him.
had any actors of note do your work,
Yeah, what were
perform
your
your work?
brushes with greatness?
I have. Judith Malina was in one of mine. I don't know if you know her, but she was
Yes.
a famous theater person back in the 1960s and 70s. And she was even she played Grandma on the Addams Family movie back in the 1990s. And she ran the Living Theater in New York City. And so just it was about a year or two before she died, she did one of my plays. And
Wow.
yeah, and she was the lead character. And yeah, it was a pretty amazing experience to have her in the starring role of one of my plays. So That's pretty awesome.
And she was she should have been in the second Addams Family movie. She was so good in the first
He
one.
was, yeah. They replaced her with Carol Kane, who was awesome. Awesome. I love Carol Kane. But yeah, Judith, I don't think she was feeling well by the second movie, so
Oh, I see.
but they didn't have her back. But yeah, she was fantastic in that first one. But yeah, she was a famous. She started living theater and in the 60s, like a big protest kind of theater, avant-garde theater movement. In the 60s and 70s, and so she was very famous for that. And I've had a couple other people that started out and then they've gone on to do some pretty big productions that were not famous at the time they were working them, but they got a little bit of brushes of fame here and there afterwards, which is kind of fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, can you tell us, without mentioning any names, are not even famous people, but are actors, do they tend to be prima donnas? You know, like, this is my craft.
There's a mix. There's a mix. There are some, certainly. But I find that the ones that are a bit more down to earth tend to get cast more often. The ones that are sort of prima donna, they tend to not be as appealing to casting directors. And so
Right.
now if you're doing like a big money film, I'm sure it comes down to who can draw the biggest crowd. And
Right.
so if you can draw a big audience, then you can afford to be prima donna-ish. But even then, somebody like who was his name? Who played the original Hulk? Ed Norton. Ed Norton has a right, isn't that his name? Ed Norton? Edward Norton?
Edward
He
Norton,
was the
yeah.
original
Edward
Hulk.
Norton.
Yeah. He apparently had, he was the Hulk in the Marvel MCU original Hulk movie that stood alone. It was Eric Bana and then him, and then came Mark Ruffalo. But anyway, Edward Norton has a reputation of being, sort of difficult to work with, but he's still a pretty big name actor and he still gets cast, but a lot of people won't work with him because of his reputation. So I think the
Oh.
same is true in the theater world. If you are a team player and you are talented, you have a really good chance of getting hired. If you are not a team player, but you're talented, you could get hired. And if you are a definitely a good team player, but not talented, there's also a chance you can get hired. But the ones team players and talented tend to get hired the most. Pedro
Hired
Pascal.
because I fit the costume.
What's that?
I've been hired once or twice because I fit the costume.
That's a good reason. That's a great, that's a great way. That's a you put that in your resume. I fit costumes,
And I've been fired too because I didn't fit the costume.
So, okay, well
There was
that all
one
happens.
time we had a fitting for this commercial about, I don't know, it was about 3 weeks before the actual filming was, and it got delayed. And by the time the actual filming day came up, I couldn't fit in the costumes. I had gained like 14 pounds in the space of
Oh,
a couple of weeks, and I
wow.
got fired.
You are
Okay.
accomplished, Law. You gained 14 pounds in 2 weeks. That's
Well,
impressive.
that's what I tried to explain to them, but they didn't want anything to do with it.
That's another thing. Christian Bale has done that too. He's gained weight for roles. So, going back to Christian Bale, because I think it's a theme happening here.
We're ready to work.
Yeah,
We're
right.
ready. We don't have to gain any weight for a role.
He did that for Dick or whatever. What was it? No, it's called the one about Dick Cheney. Veep. Vice. Was Vice.
Right, right,
Vice.
right.
Yeah.
That's a
Veep.
good
He
movie.
did. That was a good movie. Yeah, he did good. Yeah, speaking of, Dick Cheney, passed away this week. Yeah.
The heart
Yeah.
finally ran out of batteries, huh?
Yeah. Poor guy.
Do you remember when he
So
shot that guy when they were hunting?
I do remember that. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Fun
Dan, what were you
times.
going to say about Pedro Pascal? I got all
Oh yeah,
excited.
speaking of somebody who's talented and a team player is Pedro Pascal, and that guy is working all the time. He's in like everything these days, and I think that from what I hear, he's a very easy to work with person, and he's talented, and so that's a big plus all the way around. So
And he's handsome.
he is handsome. That also helps too.
Do you
Yeah.
think he's interested in two elderly, worthless Italians living in Schenectady, New York, by any chance? Like some sort
Interested
of
in what way?
private tutoring, maybe, or
Interested.
is
I mean, really, it depends on the
he
context.
blind? Has he gone blind yet?
I don't know about his dating preferences, but yeah.
So our podcast is, like we said in the beginning, is for people like us who wanted to do this for a living, and then time marched on for whatever reason, good, bad, they couldn't. And now they just don't want to give it up totally, but they're in their 60s or they're older. And like, what advice do you have for people like us who want to feel some kind of artistic satisfaction without the goal of, making a living or becoming famous. Like,
Well,
because
if you take
you're
that
living your
pressure
life.
off, if you take away that pressure of I got to be famous, I got to make money, and you're just doing it for the art, there's so much to art. You create a podcast, you can paint, you can write scripts, you can write novels, you can I think the big problem when we're especially when we're young, we want to be famous, we want to be rich, we want to we have all these dreams and these goals, and if we are putting that kind of pressure on, and if we fall short, we tend to be real mean about it. We're like, we're mean to ourselves. Like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I didn't succeed. But if you just want to create art because you love art, just then that's all you need. You create it and it comes out, it's done, and you feel good because you created that, rather than, oh, I feel bad because I didn't get the fame or the success or the money that I want. But I created something beautiful.
Doesn't a novel need a reader? An actor needs an audience? I mean,
Yeah, you do. You need
this
an
like
audience, you need a reader, but does the audience have to be, 30 million people, or can the audience be your grandma sitting in the back of the room?
We don't want that, right, La? We don't want
Oh.
our grandma anywhere near.
Well, all right, I don't know
But
about
I
your
hear
grandma,
what you're
but
saying, I
or the
guess.
dust of. Yeah, I don't
So
know about
be
your grandma.
creative in how you create your art and just have different expectations. Is that what
Do
you're
it for
saying?
yourself. Do it because you enjoy it. Now, if you really enjoy it, and there, I promise you, as alone as you may feel, there are plenty of people in the world that feel just like you. And that's the beauty of the internet and podcasting, is you can find that audience of people that are out there that are just like you. And if you like it, they're going to like it too. And that's just really, try to, I think a lot of people try to quote unquote sell out and try to appeal to the audience instead of writing what they believe in and what they care about. And I think if you're honest to yourself about what you love, other people are going to love it too. It's just the way it is.
Well, that's
Dan, I
been
think.
proved in our hate mail that we get.
Oh, really? Tell me about that. What kind of hate mail do you get?
Well, actually,
Well,
we need to wrap up the episode,
oh, do
and
we? Okay.
we always wrap it up with a listener email, so that was a good segue,
Oh, perfect. Great.
Law. Yeah, they're very seldom are they complimentary.
Really? Oh, they mean they charge you?
They can try.
They can try.
They can try.
That
Can it
well
pay you
is
in ramen
dry.
dust?
Yeah. Well, what's your email that you got this week?
Well, I don't know if you know our background, but we our father was a rather randy person in his drunken heyday, and so we were hooked up with, or we connected with our illegitimate brother who had been raised by somebody else. So our one email that we've gotten since our last broadcast was, "Dear Law and Law, whatever happened to your bastard brother? You haven't mentioned him this season." Now I
He
think
actually
that
tried to.
is, after all the stuff that Dan has taught us today, I think that is rife material, don't you? We don't know what's happened to him except he tried to sue us for our father's estate, which non-existent.
Nothing anyway.
We didn't have money to put him in the ground or burn him.
Was sad. We were kind of excited to meet him, but
Yeah.
to see what like someone raised in a normal family might be like. But from the sound of it, doesn't sound like he was raised in a normal family either. So we don't know. But usually they're criticizing the show. I don't think we've ever gotten a compliment, have we, Law?
Well, sometimes people write to us and they can identify with something we've said. I mean, it's not all hatred, and a lot of it is hatred, but not all of it.
But we're doing this for ourselves, right? This is our artistic
This one is going to get
expression.
good email because this was actually smart for once.
Well, it's all thanks to Dan.
It certainly is.
Well, great.
You can write us by halfalivepodcast@gmail.com.
And our Facebook page is Half
Halfalivepodcast.
Alive Podcast.
And Dan, do
And
you want to give any contact information or anything?
oh, sure, yeah. You can look him up on the internet is www.danguyton.com. That's DanGuyton.com. That's me. And then also the theater group that I run is called Atlanta Dramatists, and you can find us at atlantadramatists.com.
Cool. Very cool. Well,
Is
Dan.
Marjorie Taylor G? Oh, that's Georgia.
Yeah, Marjorie
Let
Taylor Greene.
Marjorie Taylor Greene. Is she your representative? No. She's
She's
in Georgia.
in Georgia, but she's a the different districts, so she's not my district. So she's
Oh.
District 5, I think, in Georgia. I think I'm in District 3. So yeah, she's not my district. I did not vote for her. I've been shockingly surprised to see that she's sort of making sense lately, which is really
Me
bizarre.
too.
Yeah, did
Well,
she hit her
me
head, do you
too.
think, and woke up in a different world?
Maybe, I
She
don't know
may
what's
end up
happening.
being the
first Republican female president.
Yes, you could. You never know. I don't know. Something is going on in the water there. I don't know what's happening, but
The swamp water.
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well,
But
thanks so
you
much,
do
Dan.
want
We
to.
appreciate it.
Sure. No problem. Thank you for having me.
And we are going to look for. I saw one of your plays years ago when I came up to visit my family in Troy. It was called, I think it was called I'm Not Gay. And it was
Oh,
the
yeah.
funniest thing I have ever seen on stage. I laughed till the point that I couldn't breathe. And
I love
usually,
it.
people say laugh out loud funny about something and it's quippy. It's not funny. But this was absolutely freaking hilarious. So
Awesome.
we expect more great things from you, and we're going to keep checking out your work.
Thank you. Thank you. Funny enough,
Thank
that's the
you.
one that I had the big success. It was ran for 4 months in Iceland, that play.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you get to go see it?
I didn't get to go see it. I just graduated college, and they said we can pay you money, or we could fly you out. We could do one or the other. And I said, I need money. I'm in debt. Yeah. So I took the money instead. But I
What
kind of
about
wish I had.
Australia? Are you going to go to Australia?
No, I'm not going to be able to go to Australia because I teach. My teaching schedule is
Ooh.
pretty strict. So yeah, but yeah, I'm nice thing about being online now. Really, I can get the video, which is nice.
Right.
Send me a video. So, yep.
Well, we can't thank you enough for
Oh, awesome.
spending
Yeah,
time with us.
absolutely. And you know, you were wrong. It didn't smell that bad. So I, you have me.
Many times have we heard that in our lives, La?
Yeah.
Usually on a
You
first
guys don't
date,
smell
you
as
don't
bad as
smell as
we
bad as we
thought.
thought you would.
Yeah, so I was pleasantly surprised. You know, maybe the Zoom thing, you know, the camera. I don't know what I expected, but you know.
I'll send you the
Or
scratch and sniff.
yeah, there
Thank
you
you.
go. There you go.
All right, take care.
Well, take care, Dan.
All
And
right.
everybody else, stay with us. We have more great guests lined up.
And I can't wait to read your novel, La.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that, and more
All
than
right.
just the first five pages.
Okay.
Take care,
Very good.
everybody.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.